I'm Marty Moscoen. Welcome to Radio Times. Back in June, the Philadelphia School District had a budget gap of $304 million and laid off nearly 4,000 employees. The School Reform Commission asked for $180 million from the city and state and $133 million in labor concessions. While schools opened on time and about half of the laid-off staff were rehired, many schools are struggling with staff shortages, larger class sizes, and are asking parents for money to cover costs. Earlier this week, Governor Corbett released $45 million to the district, and yesterday, Philadelphia City Council gave Mayor Michael Nutter the okay to give $50 million to the district based on the sale of shuttered schools. While Philadelphia is the largest school district in the state, many others are also struggling with reduced funds. Today on Radio Times, we take a look at how the Commonwealth funds education. We have two guests who have joined us here in our Philadelphia studios. Charles Zogby is the Secretary of the budget for the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. He served as Secretary of Education under Governors Ridge and Schweiker and previously served as the Senior Vice President of Education and Policy for K-12 Incorporated, an online school curriculum developer and provider. And Charles Zogby, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Nice to be with you.
Also with us, Donna Cooper, Executive Director of Public Citizens for Children and Youth. Previously, she served as Secretary of Policy and Planning for Governor Rendell and as Deputy Mayor for Policy and Planning under Mayor Rendell. And Donna Cooper, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thanks, Marty.
Charles Zogby, let me begin with this $45 million released this week to the school district. It was contingent, as I understood it, on some changes, reforms coming from the Philadelphia Federation of Teachers, from the union. Were there some union changes that, in a sense, allowed the state to give some more money to the district?
Well, what the law said, Marty, was that the school district had to begin reform in terms of operational control, academic progress, fiscal controls. And the SRC has taken a number of steps over the past many months. And I think most significantly recently, the code suspensions that allowed them to start bringing back adults into the schools, and particularly with regards to seniority, and especially in terms of the leveling process that they'll be going through in the coming weeks. And so the governor felt that the accumulation of the reforms was significant enough to be able to release the $45 million, recognizing that there's still progress that needs to be made, and particularly with respect to the teachers' union contract, the types of reforms and savings that the SRC is seeing from that. And down the road as well, we have City Council the need to enact the extend and redirect the sales tax to the school district, which would represent the single largest infusion of dollars, I think, in the history of the school district. So there's still work to do, but the governor felt there was sufficient progress that had begun that he could release those funds.
Donna Cooper, do you see this as progress?
Well, of course, releasing the $45 million is tremendous progress. And I have to say a little disappointed because the conditions that Charlie pointed out had been met in the last week of August. That's when the code suspensions occurred. And it would have been good to start school with these counselors. And in fact, I not only urge the state to do that, but we urge City Council, just advance the money, because why start school understaffed? But nevertheless, water under the dam. It's a good thing the money's been released. It's a good thing City Council and the mayor have reached agreement on the property sales, because that was a much to do about nothing argument between two levels of government. So I think they were good things. I think the code suspensions were a good thing. I think we need to get the right teachers in the right buildings, and it shouldn't only be based on seniority. But, you know, we are still significantly underfunded. And the state solution puts more local burden, and I have no problem with that. I think the city council should act to put the sales tax money into the school district. But the city's put $96 million more into the school district through legislative tax changes, and that's good. We should. And we should do the sales tax extension, but that would not offset what we absolutely need to get in terms of increased state aid.
Let me go back to you, Charles Zogby. And there have been so many stories coming out of Philadelphia, whether here at WHYY on Newsworks or some of the local papers, about class size, about teachers who use their own money to make sure that their students have books and have paper and have food in some instances. Do these stories in any way filter into some of the decision making, which is that people are suffering in the city?
Well, look at the
people
governor.
People, meaning children.
Governor Corbett is a strong supporter of public education, and over the last several budgets, we've worked hard to put additional resources into our public schools, not the least of which is our basic education funding line, where we've put nearly $800 million in new dollars into the BEF over the last three budgets. I think your listeners, though, need to understand the context that we're operating in. The state revenues are growing about $850 million a year, but our mandated expenditures, medical assistance for the most vulnerable in our society, debt service, pension costs in particular, and a large part of that for public school employees, along with public safety, are growing at about $1.2 billion. And the governor has made a commitment to the people and the businesses of Pennsylvania that he's not going to raise taxes. And so in order to do that, you have to find monies elsewhere in the budget. And so we've really struggled over the past many years to make education a priority, but it's very difficult when you have tremendous headwinds at your face that you've got to overcome. And I would say, too, that a lot of this has to do with really the legacy that this governor was left with when he took office, having to overcome serious pension underfunding, stimulus funding that was used to prop up spending that went away. And those have been very difficult challenges to overcome. And even with that, we've been able to put more resources towards our public schools.
Are you talking about Governor Rendell in that
Well,
instance?
It's an accumulation with regards to pension. It goes back Governor Ridge, Governor Schweiker, but Governor Rendell had a huge hand. And certainly with the stimulus funding, that was all on Governor Rendell's watch. And again, it's just I think there's a context here. We just didn't wake up on January 18th, 2011, and all of this is created by Governor Corbett. He came into a very difficult situation. We've got a stagnant economy that we're still trying to work through. And I think it's these types of things that make it very difficult to put money into areas when you, again, have mandated costs that you simply have to fund.
Go ahead, Donna Cooper.
Well, I think that Charlie's absolutely right. The state budget is very tight. It's obviously made tighter by a governor that has made a no-tax pledge and also a governor who reinstituted a schedule of business tax cuts. To date, since the governor took office, we've reduced business taxes by about $1 billion. And that's their prerogative. He won. He can do that. But it raises a question about the tightness of revenues. If revenues are that tight, effectuating or reinstating the rollback of business taxes when revenues are tight is not always the best strategy or the only strategy to take. I think that the concern about the utilization of the stimulus money is something that's really worthy of discussion, because we had the worst recession since the Great the worst depression since the Great Depression in the mid 2008, and we had a new president, and he went to Congress and he said, look, the economy's going to tank worse if we don't support continued employment in the public sector while the markets rebound in the private sector. And Congress, kicking and screaming to some extent, bought that strategy. And the idea was, we'll pad the funding, and when the economy rebounds, state and local government revenues will also rebound and be able to absorb that temporary padding. So, yes, Governor Rendell supported with the basic education funding, over $650 million in school money, of which $250 was new money. But when Governor Corbett came in, he, in addition, used nearly $400 million in stimulus money to reduce state spending that then in the following year accrued as part of the budget surplus, which was $1 billion. So in the year that we had $1 billion surplus, we also reduced the level of state aid, well, in the subsequent year, of funding of the state. So Charlie's right. The states put $850 million in. They replaced the stimulus money. And they've replaced to some extent. But we are still down in terms of overall classroom spending. And we're down about $850 million compared to when the governor took office. And, did the recession create that situation? Yes. Did the stimulus create that situation? Yes. But there were two parts of the stimulus package where the governor and Charlie said it, the care for Medicaid, the care for the most vulnerable. Stimulus funds used for that were replaced 100%. We used stimulus funds to support prison costs. 100% of those funds replaced. The place where we have not yet made a restoration of 100% of the stimulus money is in the basic ed subsidy, and that's hopefully what they'll do, continuing going forward.
Well, let me go back to you, Charles Ogbe, because as you're not the Secretary of Education, you're the Secretary of the Budget, but it seems to me that investing in the education of our children in the state has got to be a top priority, because these are the people who are going to be hired. These are the people that are going to be job creators. That's such an important investment for a state.
It absolutely is an important area to invest, and I would say that it's at the top of Governor Corbett's list, and he's put his money where his mouth is in terms of priorities over the last three budgets. Donna's tale or rendition, though, of the use of the stimulus funds leads out some key facts. And I think we need to go back even a little further. If you look at Act 40 of 2003, which has to do with our pension systems, Governor Rendell underfunded the teacher pensions by $3.8 billion over 7 years, 60% less funding. That had the effect of freeing up dollars in the budget that then got spent elsewhere. And the tab for his underfunding came due in the next administration. Whether it was a Republican or a Democrat, it happened to be Governor Corbett. But basically, the problem was left for a future governor to deal with. And this governor saw $300 million, $500 million increases in pension funds, where our pension cost growth right now is taking about 60% of all new revenues coming into the Commonwealth. And that's a direct result of a policy that was put in place by the prior administration. Now, the stimulus funds, I think to go back there, I think one of the irresponsible things that was done was that state funds were taken out of the basic education funding line item, the single largest line item in support of public education, nearly $500 million in state funds over 2 years at a time when I think any reasonable objective observer would have suggested the depths of the Great Recession would have been very difficult to replace. Governor Rendell not only took out state funds and replaced them with the stimulus funding, but he then increased the basic education funding with stimulus funds, knowing that they were transitory. School districts receive those funds. All they see is that the money's green, whether it's federal money, state money, they're spending it. And in fact, the guidance from the Rendell administration was to put the money into new programs. So you're basically setting up a funding of basic education that's built on a foundation of sand. And indeed, when the stimulus money went away, it was Governor Corbett that had to plug the hole with state funds, had to take it from other areas of the budget. And I think and that's the difficulty that we find ourselves in.
We're going to take a very short break, get back to our conversation. That's Charles Ogbe, Secretary of the Budget for the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. Also with us, Donna Cooper, Executive Director of Public Citizens for Children and Youth. We're talking about how we fund education here in the state of Pennsylvania. 1-888-477-9499. We'll be right back.
Tune into NewsWorks tonight, Mondays from 6 to 6:30 p.m. to catch Sky Talk, a weekly discussion of the latest news in astronomy with Dr. Derek Pitts, Chief Astronomer at the Franklin Institute, made possible in part by Independence Mission Schools.
The National Constitution Center supports WHYY. The National Constitution Center is the museum of We the People, featuring the acclaimed multimedia show Freedom Rising, Signers Hall, and the story of We the People through artifacts, a rare copy of the Constitution, and interactive exhibits. On display now through December 31st, Capture the Moment, the Pulitzer Prize photographs, a comprehensive exhibition of Pulitzer Prize-winning photography. Information at 215-409-6700 or constitutioncenter.org.
I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. It's a third day of the fall membership campaign, and it's time to renew your membership or become a new member of WHYY. We take your contribution and add it to other supporters' contributions and invest it in the programs that you enjoy, like Radio Times. What's that worth to you? $5, $10, $20 a month? You decide and give us a call. Here's that phone number, 1-888-345-9499, or pledge online at WHYY.org. Thanks.
Supporting WHYY, The Economist, covering news and ideas that interconnect the world to give readers a worldview. On newsstands, in bookstores, at economist.com, or on smartphones and tablets.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscow-Wayne. We're taking a long, hard look at funding for education in the state of Pennsylvania and the fact that many districts, including here in Philadelphia, having to do more with less. Our guests are Budget Secretary Charles Zogby and Donna Cooper, who is the head of Public Citizens for Children and Youth. And again, we have calls coming in at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. I have a bunch of follow-ups here, but Donna, you were sort of half nodding your head as Charles Zogby was talking.
Oh, I think that Charles makes a really good point that the Rendell administration used stimulus funds not just to pad current spending, but to boost by $250 million money to school districts. And it was a risky decision, and it was one made with legislative leaders. I was in the room when that occurred, and people felt that, look, we have 2 years of federal support. If we don't make a second year increase, we would have then, in essence, done $125 million over 2 years. And we expected that the economy would, based on the economic projections, rebound sufficient to make up that cost. So it was a risk, no question. But it was a commitment of the legislature and the governor to meet the goals of the new school funding formula, which basically had the intent of over 6 years closing the adequacy gap. And one of the challenges that happens as a result of the way that the cuts have been made since the Governor Corbett took office is they've hit the school districts hardest that were most dependent on state money. And they're the poorest districts, including Philadelphia, Norristown, Bristol. Places that have high levels of state aid are greatest risk when there's state cuts. Places that had money from the Accountability Block Grant, which went specifically to reduce class size or full-day kindergarten or pre-K, tutoring money that went to places that had the lowest levels of student achievement. They were the funds that were cut or eliminated. And so the hit was hardest where the kids needed the help the most. And what Charlie set up is that it was, you know, that the cause of this, and it does contribute, is the failure of the prior governor, and I would say all prior governors up until 1998, to meet the pension obligations of the state. You know, since 1998, the state has not made its required pension contributions. And, you know, it's a decision every year, you know, what are you going to fund? Charlie worked for Governor Ridge. They did a pension increase that increased the pension liability by an estimated $8 billion. Rendell also did not fund the pension liabilities. So these were, you know, decisions that, again, were risky. But it was a sense of priorities and also a belief in the market, because both governors thought if the market does well enough, the pension portfolio will also be sufficiently funded to some extent. And unfortunately, the market tanked. So, you know, but at the same time, the third part of this is it's not pensions versus schools. It's not retired teachers versus kids. There are other parts of this budget. And in the exact period in which we were forced to make that choice, we made significant business tax cuts and we had a budget surplus. So these were not decisions that needed to be made this way.
Let me follow up on something you said earlier, Charles Zogby, which is that the governor has basically made a no tax pledge. I've interviewed the governor. He has reiterated that numerous times. Some believe it's a no tax pledge to Grover Norquist. Nonetheless, let me ask
made
you,
it to the people of Pennsylvania when he campaigned.
And I understand
That's where the pledge is made to.
But let me ask you about fracking, because Pennsylvania has the lowest severance tax of any state. And some people believe, and of course these are people who are critics of this no tax pledge, saying that, you know, here's a source of money, source of resource here in the state of Pennsylvania. Why not use that money to help defray some of the costs of education or other parts of the budget
well,
for that
the,
matter?
Well, the fact is that we are extracting revenues, if you will, from the Marcellus shale industry in the state. First of all, we've seen this is a generational growth opportunity for our economy, and it's bringing jobs and economic development to areas of our state that have never seen it before, haven't seen it in decades. So folks should not this is a good thing for our economy and our state, and it's something that's going to pay dividends for generations to come. And it's important in this nascent industry that we grow it here and bring those jobs and make sure that they stay here for Pennsylvania for generations. Now, the governor worked with the legislature to have an impact fee. And so we are seeing about $200 million a year come from the industry. Now, the difference is that it's not going into the state's general fund, and folks can argue whether it ought to be going there as opposed to 67 counties across the state who are able to make their own decisions about how those resources should be spent. And you see now candidates for governor, particularly on the Democratic side, who see the shale industry as some cow to be milked and spending over and over again monies that they feel can be extracted from the industry. And I think the reality is that, look, the axiom is if you want something, less of something, tax it. And so we are getting a lot of resources from the industry, but I think we're doing it in a way that's growing it here in Pennsylvania. And again, those revenues going out to our local communities as opposed to going into the state's general fund.
A quick comment, if you don't mind, Donna Cooper.
Just very quickly, we have the lowest effective tax rate of any major shale production state or major natural gas production state. West Virginia, which is where the Rendell had proposed to set the tax rate and where some of the Democratic candidates have also proposed, would not hurt our industry. I mean, our companies are making extraordinary profits. The, quote, nascent or developmental period should be way behind us. There's sufficient drilling going on. So if we had a reasonable tax rate akin to West Virginia, which is still lower than Oklahoma and Texas, we would be generating about $600 million in the early years and up to $1 billion perhaps. So I think it would be a huge relief. When I was in Harrisburg, the shale guys were in my office saying, we don't understand why we're being taxed so low in Pennsylvania.
Is that
regularly?
A quote?
I mean, absolutely. They said, in fact, there was a coalition of them who said, We will be silent if the governor proposes a tax increase because they thought it was kind of ridiculous.
Let me go back to the Philadelphia School District, and there are other districts as well that are facing some of these budget shortfalls. But do you see the problems in Philadelphia as one of Philadelphia's own making, that it's Philadelphia's fault that they don't have enough money for their schools?
No, I think it's an accumulation of issues. Certainly, the district for a number of years put off the right sizing that needed to be done. There's 50,000 students or so who have exited the traditional public schools for charters. It's only during these recent couple of years with this new SRC that they got about the business that they should have done long ago of right-sizing.
Meaning closing schools?
Closing schools and consolidating where necessary. And I think we need to, everybody talks about revenues and as if it's a one, panacea to everything. I think we need to look on the spending side as well. Let's not sit here today and believe that every dollar of the $2.4 billion that the Philadelphia School District spends is effectively used. We spend a lot of money in public education, for instance, to encourage teachers to get master's degrees that the evidence shows really doesn't make a difference in the classroom in terms of student achievement. Might those be resources that could be redirected into other areas of the public education system?
You don't want teachers getting continuing education or higher degrees?
Well, I'm all for continuing education, but I think it's a question of whether we ought to be using public taxpayer dollars to invest in an area, again, where the research shows it doesn't make a difference in terms of student achievement in the classroom. And I think that's the big difference. If teachers want to go and get a graduate degree or master's courses, whatever it might be, they can spend their money to do that. I'm talking about taxpayer money. And I think we can all agree that it ought to be kids learning in the classroom that's the most important barometer. And you look at the PSSA scores, for instance, for the Philadelphia School District. Only half of the kids are proficient or advanced in reading and math. We still have a great number of African American and Hispanic students who are graduating without the basic skills that they need to make it in the real world, as it were. So again, it's not just a money issue. It's looking at in a 360 way at the entire system and the types of reforms that need to be instituted to improve the quality of education in our schools.
Don, let me give you a chance to respond. I mean, how you see the money should be spent, and then I do want to get to some of our callers.
Well, look, the bottom line is, since the governor took office, including the restoration of some funds, the district has lost $1,273 per student. So times 150,000 students, that's a lot of money. So can the district spend its money better? Absolutely. But we're down to 2% on administration. And schools are already suffering as a result of having very weak back office operations in the 440 building and elsewhere. So those of us who live here know it's a pretty thin operation. I agree with Charlie. The research doesn't support any masters is a worthwhile investment. But certain masters are. The states that have the highest student performance in math have the highest concentration of people with math degrees who are masters or PhD students teaching in their schools.
Right, but the facts are that most teachers go back for masters in education, not masters in math or science, where the research is clear that that does make a difference.
Right.
So
and
if
I
we want to have
should.
A policy to support teachers in those areas, I believe that's critical, but we ought to at the same time be pulling resources out of areas that are ineffective.
I agree, but out of our budget, you know, $2.7 billion, we're paying about $80 million for the masters. So we should redirect that $80 million more effectively, but it's not going to radically change the environment of a $2.7 billion operation. And as Charlie says, we only have about half of our kids at proficiency, but in the years in which the state was increasing its aid, the school district was also performing better. In 2002, we had 20% of our kids, or 25%, who were proficient in reading and math. So we've doubled those numbers. They're not good enough. We have a long way to go. The district needs to do a better job. But it's very hard to do a better job when your budget is declining.
And that's Donna Cooper. She heads up Public Citizens for Children and Youth. Also with us is Budget Secretary Charles Zogby. We are talking about funding for education in Pennsylvania. We've been focusing largely on Philadelphia because of its well-known financial problems, but it's also true for other districts as well. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Yes, we do take phone calls here on Radio Times. Let me get, looks like Helen Gim joining us. Helen Gim, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Well, I appreciate the conversation about money. Secretary Zogby, I want to talk about the mission of the state to provide a thorough and efficient education. Hundreds of complaints from parents have been filed from dozens of schools across the city, documenting massive and broad violations of the state code, including lack of guidance counselors, complete lack of arts in the schools, overcrowding and split grades, barely a dozen librarians citywide. And this is all due to a refusal to fund sufficient numbers of employees within our schools. You've run our schools for 12 years, and my three children and 138,000 Philadelphia kids are paying for your refusal to uphold it, your own mandate to responsibly fund our public schools. And I'd like an answer for the hundreds of complaints that have been filed documenting all these violations of the state code.
Helen Gim, thanks for the call to Radio Times, a well-known education activist here in Philadelphia. And when she says you run, it's because the state took over the Philadelphia School District about 12 years ago.
Well, it's a school reform commission that is made up of both state and city appointees, and the balances on those have changed over time. Look, at the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania provides $1.3 billion in aid to Philadelphia schools. If you add up all of the suburban, southeast suburban school districts with almost twice as many students, we're providing $1 billion in aid to all of those school districts. So clearly the taxpayers of Pennsylvania are sending an incredible amount of resources to the Philadelphia School District. I think every school district would like to have more. Certainly, I think the governor would love to be in a position to put more funds into basic education. But we're in a position, again, where with high mandated costs, stagnant revenues, and legacy costs that we continue to have to pay, it gets very difficult. And even with that, the governor's been able to provide $800 million in new aid through basic education funding. And we've also also implemented a very dynamic teacher evaluation system that is focused on identifying strengths and weaknesses of teachers in the classroom, remediating toward those, trying to raise the level of effectiveness of teachers. Other reforms that have been put in place, again, to raise the quality of our public schools. Lots of new resources have gone into Philadelphia over the years. We still see 70% of the kids leaving in the 11th grade, particularly among blacks and Hispanics, without the basic skills. If money were the answer, we would have seen 100% proficiency long ago. It's not just a resource issue. It's reforms as well that need to take place. And those are the sorts of things that the SRC, Superintendent Height, and the governor are trying to seek right now.
Let me read something that someone posted on our Facebook page yesterday. She said, I teach in Reading. I've been watching as our urban districts are decimated. Class size 30-plus, art gym and music classes, a distant memory, libraries closed. And as during all economic crises over the last 5 years, we have seen the needs of our students rising. And I want to get you to respond, Donna, just to this formula issue that you raised before. And the formula, and I know you've been a critic feeling that this formula isn't an effective one and doesn't have enough transparency in terms of districts relying on reliable sources of funding for education.
Right. I think the question that Charlie sort of asking us to think about is, does money really matter? And I think that the residents who go to Lower Merion are very clear that money matters, and they're spending over $20,000 a kid. And so I think that that's why you're seeing good results in Lower Merion. There are other reasons. There are stable families. There are less kids that come to school with needs. But that's actually the reason why you have to compensate more in districts of low wealth, where kids are actually going to start school with greater needs and less stability at home and less help at home and less educated parents. So the Reading School District, which is one of the poorest in the state, if not the poorest in terms of local wealth and per student expenditure levels that are very low, is really dying. It's one of the reasons I think this year of the 30 districts that got an increase, only 30 got a substantial increase in the state. The rest got less than 2%. Reading was in that list because of the category that was created for English language learners. And there's a lot of immigrant students in Reading. But Philadelphia didn't get any of those increases, even though we have a greater share and a greater number of English language learners than other districts that received that supplement this year. We don't really have a formula in this right now. We have, in a very derogatory sense, I think we've closed down the state WAM program for economic development.
Walking around money?
Yeah, and opened it up for schools. So when the legislature passed a formula in 2008, there was a math that was predictable. Now, the increases were up to annual debate, but the way in which the money was being distributed was clear and agreed upon in a bipartisan way. And we're really set back now by having unpredictability and essentially chaos in our school funding system.
We're almost up at a break here, but are you saying that the formula has been politicized so that people with connections are getting the kind of money they want for their district?
I know it's political. I don't know who has connections. But if you look at the distribution, it is not based on objective factors of need, i.e. poverty, English language learners, kids who might come with special needs, density
of
poverty.
That's simply not true, Donna. Governor Corbett's budgets have driven out money based on student counts. We've had supplements for English language learners as well.
But Charlie, the schools that got the English language learners weren't the schools with the greatest share or greatest number.
That's just not true,
Donna. Well, Philadelphia, Norristown, Bristol, they didn't get it.
There were.
Hold on. They're playing my song. We have to take a very short break, talking with Pennsylvania Budget Secretary Charles Zogby and with Donna Cooper, head of Public Citizens for Children and Youth. We are talking about funding for education in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. Also, you can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. Much more after the short break. We'll be right back.
Penn supports WHYY. Do you frequently walk into a room and immediately forget why? Do you need to write things down to remember them? If this sounds familiar to you, you may qualify for a research study focusing on cognition and memory in menopausal women. The Penn Center for Women's Behavioral Wellness is seeking women between the ages of 45 and 60 to participate in research to study the effects of certain hormones and medication on cognition in peri- and postmenopausal women. 215-41-STUDY.
I'm Marty Moscoane. Thanks for listening to Radio Times. Now take that next step and become a listener supporter. We bring you 2 hours of lively and diverse interviews every day, 5 days a week, 52 weeks a year. Today at school, funding crisis in Pennsylvania and pitcher Jamie Moyer. Take a moment right now and make your pledge of support. 1-888-345-9499. That's 1-888-345-WHYY, WHYY.org. Thanks.
Moore College of Art and Design joins you in support of WHYY and will host its open house on Sunday, October 27th from 2 to 4 p.m. for its career-focused co-ed graduate studies programs taught by professionally active faculty in an intimate campus environment on the Parkway. Alumni, faculty, and program managers will be available for you to speak with, and the galleries at Moore and the Art Shop will be open. For more on Moore College of Art and Design's October 27th open house, moore.edu. Or 215-965-4016.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscow, and we're talking about funding for education in Pennsylvania. And a quick re-ID for our guest, Charles Zogby, Secretary of the Budget for the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. He was Secretary of Education under Governors Ridge and Schweiker and previously served as the Senior Vice President of Education and Policy for K-12 Incorporated. That's an online school curriculum developer and provider. Donna Cooper, Executive Director of Public Citizen for Children and Youth. She served as Secretary of Policy and Planning for Governor Ed Rendell of Pennsylvania and had essentially the same job when he was mayor of the city of Philadelphia. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. I know we could go back and forth here, but let me get David from Center City, Philadelphia to join us. David, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi, thanks so much for taking my call.
You're welcome.
This is a question directed at the secretary.
Sure.
I keep hearing about all the reforms that have to take place for the Philadelphia school system, where I have two kids in elementary school. And what it seems to me you're saying and the state is saying is that kids now have to suffer for possible reforms in the future. And kids right now are suffering. There aren't counselors, nurses, librarians, extracurricular programs. There are overcrowded classrooms. We don't have school aides. We're still, by my count, $150 million short of a minimum budget. Kids now are suffering for future reforms. Why is that acceptable to make kids currently go through this system that is underfunded without basic needs for some hope for the future?
David, thanks for the call. Go ahead, Charles.
Well, look, I think it's critical that we put this district back on a path to long-term sustainability. And as the SRC and Superintendent Height would like, academic excellence. And Philadelphia has been an underperforming urban district for a great many years. And unfortunately, we've had past administrations overseeing the schools that sort of just kick the can down the road, if you will, in terms of the types of reforms, the types of changes that need to be made. I know from my history with Governor Ridge, you never knew from one moment to the next the reality of Philadelphia's budget. It would go from deficit to surplus and back again almost overnight and being whipsawed. You look at the types of reforms that the SRC and Superintendent Height want, the ability, for instance, to assign adults to buildings that where they're consistent with the mission of the building or they fit with the needs of the kids there, instead of just say a seniority-only approach that has been the model for years. Those are the sorts of changes that are needed. And I would suggest that a great many things that have gone on in public schools have not been about kids. They've been about the adults and the adult interests. And so when we talk about reforms, we're talking about things, for instance, that are kids focused. You know, Donna wants to have more money. Well, I would like to have more money too, but I'd like the Governor Corbett would like to see that money be able to follow the child. A lot of the inequities that happen in local school districts are around local decision making, where there's more resources in schools that have the fewest needs, and schools with the greatest needs tend to get fewer resources. And that has nothing to do with decision making in Harrisburg, and everything to do with adults and local decision making. So it's things like that that have to change that the governor would like to see progress on. And I think that the superintendent and the SRC are trying to institute. And, you know, it's interesting. We've gone almost this whole program, and I've yet to hear anybody talk about changes that the PFT needs to make. They're the single largest group of adults that have an impact on our kids, and yet we have continued stonewalling by the president of the union. just unwilling to make reforms, unwilling to help in terms of the savings that are needed. Remember how this started. Back in the spring, the SRC said that they needed $300 million in new funding to close the gap. They needed $120 million from the state, $60 million from the city, and they needed concessions from their labor partners. The state has delivered on its money. We're working to try to deliver the city money. Where is the PFT? Where are the reforms and savings from them? They were part of this solution from the beginning as well, and they've been absent from the field. It's time for them to get to the table and make the kind of changes that are needed that are going to allow this school district to get back on a path of long-term sustainability and excellence.
Do you think the PFT holds the keys to solving this crisis?
I think the PFT has an important role to play to help improve the work rules in the school district. So I think seniority alone should not be a decision in how teachers are assigned. I think paying for any master's doesn't make any sense. That's why PCCY formed the Coalition for Effective Teaching, to push for contract reforms that will improve teaching. But I'm not sure I think taking the average teacher who's making $60,000 a year and asking them for a financial give back is in the interest of this school district. Charlie said, let's think about how this all started. This started when this, not this started, but this, the context of this environment began when the state took over the school district. And it was during the Ridge administration. And I actually supported it because I thought if the state takes over the school district, we will see more state aid. And in fact, when Governor Ridge took over the state school district, the district did see more aid. And then obviously during the Rendell term, the school district saw more aid. Now that aid had to come with conditions. You've got to use it for small class size. You've got to use it for full day kindergarten. You've got to use it for pre-K. A lot of that aid came with strings, not all of it. I think we need to be more tough on how schools spend money. And I would hope Charlie would encourage the governor's appointees to the SRC to do transparency on school budgets, because we don't know in Philadelphia how much is spent by school, and we should. But you cannot – it is the beginning of this administration when the aid got reduced by more than $1,200 a student, and as a result, you're at risk of music, you're at arts sports, you're at arts of curricula, you're losing the basic things, the core reasons that keep kids in school and keeps adults there as well, because it's an environment that people want to be in. We're going backwards.
Let me get Beth from Doylestown to join our conversation. Beth, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I am calling from Doylestown. My kids attend the Central Bucks School District in Bucks County, and Central Bucks is the third largest district in the state. We have about 21,000 students, but we're somewhat of an anomaly because we're a high-performing large district, and we are wealthy by the state standards when considered under the funding formula. As a result, we have an approximately $290 million budget. Only about $50 million of that, or about 12%, comes from the state. We get about 1% from the federal government. So really, the burden falls on our taxpayers. So to me, living in this community, which is considered wealthy, but certainly has a large population of people who can't afford the consistent property tax increases that are essentially forced because the state's not funding their share, I find the lack of changing the funding formula, the fatally flawed funding formula that hurts us just as well as it hurts Philly and other districts, every day that goes by that this governor doesn't fix that is kicking the can down the road, to use Mr. Zogby's terms. Now, that being said, the previous administration has also kicked the can down the road on pensions. And Ms. Cooper mentioned that when choosing where to spend money, the state doesn't pit picking pensions above kids or pensions above teachers. But because they kicked the can down the road, that's what's actually happening here out in every local district.
Well, Beth,
right now, districts are making poor decisions for kids and for teaching and for education because they have to pay for that pension that has gone untouched for far too long.
Well, I appreciate the call to Radio Times, Beth. And it's interesting to hear from a wealthier district, and feeling, as Beth does, Charles Zogby, is that the local residents have had to pay more in property taxes in order to offset what the state has been paying.
Well, look, the money has to come from somewhere. Pennsylvania's approach has always been a blended approach. It's state funds, and the majority of state funds, the large portion, goes to poor school districts. But we've also said that if you have local wealth, we're going to expect you as a state to contribute more locally. Look, in terms of a funding formula, we have tried to move, and the governor campaigned on what's called a weighted student funding formula, where you have trying to move towards a backpack concept, if you will, where money moves from the child, and no matter where a child lives in the Commonwealth, that there would be a base amount of support that would go with them. And to the extent that the child has additional challenges, their special needs, or they're an English language learner, things of that nature, that they would see higher levels of support. The difficulty has been just the lack of resources that we've had at a state to do that. And I think, you know, politically you have to understand as well that there's no member of the General Assembly that's going to want to see money taken away from their school district. And we have also in law a hold harmless, so that even if a school district is seeing a decrease in the number of students, they still get the same amount of money. And it's a competition every year. We would love to be able to move towards a more a weighted student formula that recognizes the difficulties or the challenges that a child comes with, be able to put that on a child's back to the move to the school of their choice and actually see that those resources make it to the classroom in support of the child.
Let me toss that back to you, Donna Cooper, because if the money is following the student, we're talking about either vouchers or we're talking about the development of charter schools. And as we know here in Philadelphia, many charter schools have been developed as a result of the state takeover and the SRC. Do you see that as good for students, good for education, good for parents in Philadelphia?
I think that charters have created opportunity here, and they've created opportunity in other districts to the degree that they're high quality. I think Philadelphia and York and other school districts suffer with too many charters that aren't performing better than the school district. And the school, you know, we sort of rested with the very entity that's struggling to hold itself accountable, accountability over other institutions. So that's a little bit of a model problem. But I do think that the high-performing charters have been a terrific opportunity. I think the way in which we structure them drains resources, and we don't need to do it that way. The approach
because the money follows the student, you're saying.
Right, but if the money follows the student and you take over a whole building, like the Renaissance charters have done, it's a zero-sum game for the district. That really works. And so I think that's a really exciting model and maybe has – it could be seen as an evolution in how we think about the role of charters. So I think there's some real opportunity that's been created by them. I think we have a lot of work to do to make that opportunity meaningful, both for the kids that go to charters and kids in the district, because the district should be replicating these practices that are effective. I do want to let Beth know that in 2010, the Ridge administration, Corbett nor Ridge, the Rendell administration, together with the legislature, passed a pension reform bill. And it did mandate a level of employer contribution, and it did establish that through 2015 it would be very high, and then it would level off after that. So, yes, the can was kicked down the road, but in 2010 there was an effort to try and deal with that. And unfortunately, I know Central Bucks is dying over its pension contribution. The only sort of shining light is maybe after 2015, you won't see annual growth in that if the markets don't tank.
Well, and interesting enough, though, Governor Rendell passed that reform measure and left the entire bill to come due after he left office.
That's not accurate.
The increases did not start until the 11-12 year. Look at, I think
yes,
one of the issues, one of the issues
that
with the funding
the
formula
year.
Is that we fund school districts. We don't fund kids. For instance, here in Philadelphia, if you look at some of your, you know, I'll say best schools, what you'll typically find in those schools are kids that are above average. You'll find more senior teachers who are higher paid. And then you go to some of the lowest performing schools, and what you're going to find is sort of freshmen and sophomore teachers, not necessarily less effective, But certainly less well paid than some senior teachers. The research shows that at a typical elementary school, an average elementary school, the change in funding is about $250,000. And that's just from – those are decisions made by central office in terms of teacher assignments, in terms of resources. And that has little to do with decision-making in Harrisburg. And so
I just got to jump in here and just quickly remind our listeners, you're listening to Radio Times here on WHYY. I'm also looking at the clock here, and I'm sorry to interrupt you there. I have to live and die by that clock from time to time. So in the couple of minutes that we have left, I mean, where do we go from here? And as I said earlier in the hour, I mean, kids are suffering not in just in Philadelphia, but also in Reading. We also, quoting from this this Facebook page, you know, from this teacher from Reading saying, you know, those of us left in the trenches watch the security of health care and a pension get flushed down the toilet as if we're the ones responsible for all the bad decisions that have been made. And I think a lot of well-meaning, hardworking teachers feel like, you know, they're the fall guy.
Well, the teachers aren't the fall guy, but there are economic decisions that need to be made. I would say that, you know, one of the frustrating things that I had to live through as budget secretary, particularly in the first year, trying to close a $4.2 billion deficit left to us by the previous administration, is you see school districts were inking contracts 3-4 years with 3, 4.5, 5% pay increases. This is at a time when a lot of Americans were out of work, or going back to an earlier question, where individuals were taking pay cuts in order to stay on the job. So while the rest of America and Pennsylvania were making sacrifices, those same dynamics weren't in place in our public schools. They saw a $1 billion increase in funds. So in some ways, we're making up for lost time. But look at the governor wants to support public education, wants to put more resources there. But we're in a position that unless we're willing to tax Pennsylvania families more, we're not going to have that level of resources.
I'm giving you 30 seconds.
Or Pennsylvania companies. We did $1 billion in tax cuts, and we did $1 billion in education cuts. Those revenues could have been used for schools. And so I think the real question is, what's the priority in the state? We think the priority ought to be kids, and we think that these cuts have been horrific. And I think the no tax pledges should be changed to say we will not affect taxes to the extent that they harm our children.
And that's Donna Cooper. Thank you for joining us today on Radio Times. Executive Director of Public Citizens for Children and Youth, Charles Ogbe, thank you for joining us as well. Secretary of the Budget for the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. Appreciate those phone calls. Sorry we couldn't take more. I know there were a lot stacked up there. Go to whyy.org/Radio Times, and you can find out much more about this program. I'm Marty Moscoe. Thank you so much for joining us. Stay with us for Hour 2. We'll be right back.